So how did he do it? How did 29-year-old Horizon Air employee Richard Russell, who normally handled baggage and towed planes, how did he steal one, a turboprop, from Seattle-Tacoma International Airport Friday night? And why did he do this? Someone who sounded in his conversations with ground control so poignantly nice. His family and friends called him Bebo. One spoke over the weekend.
We are stunned and heartbroken. May seem difficult for those watching at home to believe, but Bebo was a warm, compassionate man. It is impossible to encompass who he was in a press release. He was a faithful husband, a loving son, and a good friend.
We may never know the why he stole and crashed a plane, but we can answer some of the how questions with aviation expert and former inspector general for the Department of Transportation, Mary Schiavo. And Mary, we're getting two messages here. The transportation security expert Errol Southers said on CBS that this is the greatest threat in aviation, someone working inside. This is a huge deal. But then we have Patrick Smith, who writes the Ask the Pilot blog, saying the average person, if put in a cockpit of such a plane, couldn't get a propeller turning if his or her life depended on it, let alone take to the air. He says this is really an outlier. Where do you fall?
Well, probably between the two, and I suppose that's a good lawyerly response. The answer is it depends. You know, actually, aviation, modern aviation, isn't at all like it was when I learned to fly. I learned to fly back in the late 70s, and you had to go out to the airfield and literally punch holes in the sky to get the feel of your plane. Now, all planes, including this Q400, are completely computerized. This aircraft is literally managed and started by the FADEC system, the Full Authority Digital Engine Control System. So if he did any study, and he said in the recordings with the air traffic controller, if you did any study on a computer on a laptop, you can learn the computers in the plane. In fact, nowadays, a good portion of your training, and it's approved by the FAA, is in a simulator sitting in an office, in a lab, in a classroom, on a computer.
Well, in fact, we just did a brief Google search on YouTube, and you can get a million how to fly a plane tutorials. Here's just a little bit of one.
All right, we'll do our before takeoff checklist, and we'll make sure that our wing flaps are up. And once we get on the runway, we're going to go throttle full open, so full throttle.
Okay, now what you're seeing there is you're seeing the dash of this plane, and you're seeing everything that he's doing. This is a very different plane. This is more like what you were talking about, you know, that you had. It was more by feel than by computer.
Right.
But you can get these lessons.
That's right. In fact, there's one out there that actually has a picture of this plane on the cover of the software. It actually says Alaska Airlines. It's $49. Now, you put that realization in today's modern aviation, meaning that if you're going to flight school, you have a background check. You have to tell the FAA if you've taken any medications, including anything for depression or psychological drugs. But if you're working on the airfield and you're one of the 900,000 U.S. Airport employees in this country, all you have is a criminal background check. You have to prove your identity, meaning fingerprints have to match, your driver's license have to match. Yeah, have to be who you say you are. That's your background check. Mm. So you have people that can learn to fly. And the only exception would be, and he didn't need this, landing. I still think landing takes some skill and finesse. The moment he took off, he couldn't have known how to land it.
Well, and he said many times during the tape, I don't think I plan on landing it. In other words,
right.
People are seeing this, it's speculation, as a something of a suicide mission. But you talk about how airport workers don't have the screening. It doesn't sound as if with this young man, and again, we're speculating here, but it doesn't sound as if they would have found anything anyway. He even says, I have a screw loose, and I don't think I knew that till now. So let's go back to stealing a plane out of a hangar. How do you do that? We know he had access to the tow device. That was part of his job. So he could tow this plane and turn it around. We also know that as part of his job, he could sit in the pilot's seat as it was towed. But how do you then get on a runway and take off without people blocking you.
Well, and that's where it comes back to the airline security program. Each airline has their own security program. And one of the elements that must be in that security program is to prevent unauthorized access to aircraft. Now, there are a lot of ways to do it. In the olden days, you locked them up. But in today's modern environment, you can have access to the aircraft through the computers for towing purposes. But for full authority to actually turn on and operate the airline and to put it into certain modes, what you would have to do in this modern day and age is have a computer lockout. In other words, it would take a pilot's code into the flight computer to allow the plane to be put in any kind of a operational mode other than for towing. So I think airlines will have to look at that, because Congress will probably rev up last year's bill. Remember, the House passed a bill last year as part of the Homeland Security Committee to look at the security or lack of security and the access of 900,000 airport employees. Mm-hmm. By the way, in that report, they found 73 employees at airports in the United States had connections to terror groups. This fellow obviously didn't, but this will open the speculation to saying, well, what if it wasn't this fellow?
Well, as Pearl Jam is playing at the Safeco stadium just a few miles away, he could have crashed the plane there. And he was so sensitive to not even wanting to land it on a strip that the controllers were trying to get him to land it at, because he was afraid he wouldn't be able to do it and he'd hurt someone. Let's listen to just a little bit more of him speaking with those controllers.
So I know you're getting a good view there, but if you go too much further in that direction, I won't be able to hear you anymore.
All right. Hey, pilot guy, can this thing do a backflip, you think?
Pilot guy. At another point, he applauds their professionalism. Mm-hmm. It just is heartbreaking in
a
way. But again, to the question, how did he get down the runway? I've been in a control tower. They've got those little tiles that they move around. They see everything on the runway. How did a truck not block him when he was getting out?
Well, because of the layout of SeaTac and where Alaska Airlines cargo hangar is, it's a very short, straight shot. And the tower there, I mean, it's a new one, but it does have blocked areas on the airport where you can't see everything moving. And what we don't know yet, and this will be on the flight data recorder, is whether he turned on the taxi lights, whether he turned on the lights on the plane. We don't know if he did that. If he didn't turn on any lights, they might not have been able to see it when it first started moving. And if a guy's with the tug is moving a plane around, the assumption is that it's okay. You're just tugging the plane around. Mm. And so between that point and when he actually got in and turned it on to get onto the runway is a very straight shot.
By the way, how does he get into the pilot seat? Does he climb over from the tug, as you call it, the tow?
No, he has to disconnect it. He has to get the tug out of the way, take the tow bar out of the way, and then literally, you know, open the door and go in. Now,
but how does he get up to the door?
Well, see, this plane isn't high in the air. This isn't like a 777 or a 747 or a 380. Mm. This plane has a door, has stairs in it.
Just briefly, it could have been much worse. It has alerted people in the industry that there is a problem. But for those controllers, that must have just been a horror.
Well, it was a horror. And, you know, one of the good things about the controllers that they did is they got him talking. At one point, he asked the controllers if they could help him get the plane pressurized because he was lightheaded. But if he was not at an altitude over 10,000 feet and well over 10,000 feet, hypoxia doesn't usually set in right at 10,000 feet. For him to be complaining about lightheadedness, to me, was a clue. Maybe he was ill. Maybe he had a problem. That, to me, was a clue. And the air traffic controllers, by keeping him talking, learned a lot, going to help in the investigation tremendously. And, you know, by being kind and having a gentle touch with him, you know, perhaps they helped avoid disaster.
Mary Schiavo, thank you so much.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
Mary is the former Inspector General for the Department of Transportation. So, did you watch? It was terrifying, sickening for his loved ones. Until it ended so badly, maybe a little thrilling.